things that are critically important to living before God. Proverbs, and I think, you know, the more I study, the more I appreciate them, that they're straightforward, and yet so often, because they are snapshots, they are just, you know, little snippets of truth, they require us to think more deeply than we might at first appreciate. We were talking about chapter 26 and verse 17 as we ended our class Wednesday night. He who passes by and meddles in a quarrel not his own is like one who takes a dog by the ears. Obviously, this proverb is driving home to us the point, don't be a meddler. Don't be a busybody in other people's affairs that feel like, you know, every time you see some problem, well, it's your place to jump in there and settle it. And yet, we were also trying to point out, this is not the whole truth. There are times when sin is involved in someone's life, when it is the most unloving thing you could do to walk by. You know, Proverbs, you have to think and know. You know, don't insert yourself where you don't belong. But then, you know, don't stay out of things you should be involved in. And I think about, as a parent, as one who is an in-law, you know, these are things that sometimes it can be a tough call. You know, we don't want to see our adult children ruin their lives. But at the same time, you know, it's not our place to intervene every time there's a disagreement between, you know, our child and the spouse, our grandchildren as they, you know, get older. You know, that's not our place anytime. And yet, if we see real trouble, then we're obligated. In other words, we have to think through life. We just can't walk through life blindly, you know, with a rule that I'll never be involved, or with a rule that says, well, anytime I see a problem, I'm jumping in and I'm going to solve that. We have to think and be concerned and be caring. But think on that, and then here's another one to think on. Number 44. This is again from chapter 26. Verses 18 and 19 says, like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, I was only joking. Now, is he telling us we can't ever do things in which we're joking? What's he trying to get at here? What is he describing here? All right, purposefully deceive, purposefully hurt, and yet try to use the cover of, well, I was only kidding. I was only joking. And there is, you know, this is describing deliberate intent. Don't we see that sometimes? How many of us haven't done it? You know, where, and especially when we get called on it. Well, I was just kidding. I didn't mean for you to take it seriously. Really? How was I supposed to take that? You know, when the flaming arrow landed in my wheat field, how was I supposed to take that? You know, that you can't use laughter to cover malice. You know, that's a real danger. But what if there's no malice? And I know, I'm moving away. I don't think this was the point of the proverb, but I think it's something worth noting. That sometimes even when we don't intend to throw firebrands, arrows, and death, jokes can hurt people. Now, again, look. If you cannot learn to ever laugh at yourself, you're going to live a miserable life. You know, we all do things that are worthy of being teased about. You know, I mean, we just, you know, we do some dumb things sometimes. And we need to laugh as others laugh. That's part of, well, that's just part of life. But we need to be careful about saying things. We know this is true. You know, and if a person is that kind of a person, you know, that can't ever, you know, they can't laugh at anything, then just learn that and stay away from it. But even people who can laugh at a joke, even then, everybody has feelings, you know. Sometimes some people's feelings are buried more deeply than others, but everybody's got feelings, and let's be careful here. Try to, you know, it's a lesson for all of us in this. Anybody thoughts, comments? You know, I know we've all, this is probably one of those we've all been on the receiving end. We've probably all been on the giving end of it when it was too far. But, you know, I would hate to think about a world in which nobody could laugh and make a joke about things. You know, just love one another and do the right thing. All right, look at 26 and 27. It says, whoever digs a pit will fall into it, and he who rolls a stone will have it roll back on him. We sometimes say what goes around comes around. And I ask you a question. My question was the character from Esther that serves as a good illustration of this. Who was that? Haman. What did he have built for Mordecai? Oh, he had those, and he had them built tall. He wanted everybody to see Mordecai hanging there. And ended up, it was Haman that was hanged on those gallows. And I think about, I mean, what the point is, when you try to hurt somebody else, you often end up hurting yourself. But I look at this context, and it look, you know, as we've noted before, context in Proverbs can be tricky, because the writer of Proverbs, this is a collection of thoughts that sometimes it's hard to detect any sort of pattern, and I think sometimes there is no pattern. It's just a collection. But I want you to start at verse 23 with me. Well, actually, we could back it up to verse 22. The words of a talebearer are like tasty trifles, and they go down into the inmost body. Fervent lips with a wicked heart are like earthenware covered with silver dross. He who hates disguises it with his lips and lays up deceit within himself. When he speaks kindly, do not believe him, for there are seven abominations in his heart. Though his hatred is covered by deceit, his wickedness will be revealed before the assembly. Whoever digs a pit will fall into it, and he who rolls a stone will have it roll back on him. A lying tongue hates those who are crushed by it, and a flattering mouth works ruin. All around verse 27 has to do with things we say. And I think there's probably a special application to it, though I don't know that it limits it, because he's talking about the man that has that hatred, that ill will, that we may hide it, but it's going to end up hurting us. You know, if you dig the pit, you fall into it. You know, people who carry grudges, people who go through life with resentments, and you know, they're seeking to hurt people. They pay a heavy price for that, emotionally, and then, you know, sometimes absolutely physically. The man, you know, that, you know, he gets vengeance, and he goes to jail for it. or in his attempt to get even, he's the one that is wounded himself. Vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. What did we talk about? And it all runs together, either Wednesday or the previous Sunday. If your enemy is hungry, what do? Feed him. You don't dig a pit and try to push him off in it. You don't try to roll a stone down on him, because it ends up coming back to you. Let us learn that great lesson. Anybody, y'all, don't hesitate to jump in. Look at number 46 here. Why does he tell us that we ought not boast about tomorrow? We don't know about it, do we? Look at what he says. Do not boast about tomorrow, 27:1. For you do not know what a day may bring forth. Look at a couple other passages. 16:9, Proverbs 16:9. A man's heart plans his way, but the Lord directs his steps. Chapter 19, verse 21. There are many plans in a man's heart. Nevertheless, the Lord's counsel, that will stand. When you read, do not boast about tomorrow, you do not know what a day may bring forth, does it bring to mind a New Testament passage? Yeah, James 4, 13. You know, come now you who say today or tomorrow we will go to such and such a city, spend a year there, buy and sell, and make a profit. And he said, the problem is, you do not know what the day will bring forth. For what is your life? You know, he says, it's just the vapor. Now, here's the question. What's he trying to get us to understand here in 27:1? Just don't think about the future. Don't make plans for the future. Is that his point? All right. God's in control. Again, don't put 27:1 against the rest of Proverbs. A lot of Proverbs has been about working, preparing for the future, preparing your fields. You remember Solomon told his son, the king, he said, you better look to your fields, because he said, your treasures, they could disappear, but you'll still have the milk from your goats. You know, that's planning for the future. You know, we're going to look, hopefully we'll get to talk about the ants who prepare their food for the winter. He's not saying don't think about the future. But one, don't get all boastful and think I'm in control. We aren't in control. Men make plans. The only plans that we can be sure that hold up are God's plans. And, you know, I think that secondly, you know, there's just that idea that you always plan as the Lord wills. Think about Matthew 6. What did Jesus say about why shouldn't you worry about tomorrow? Tomorrow, you know, live in the day. There it's a point of, you know, you're so focused on the future, you can't seek God first today. You can't live with faith today. You know, don't boast of tomorrow. Yes, sir. Sam, and then I saw Mike, okay? Yeah. They do. And it's the attitude. And this is the kind of thing, it is so easy for us to not give the proper attention to, because it doesn't deal with some kind of an absolute. You know, do not commit murder. You know, or even, let's just take it to the heart, don't hate. Well, it's easy to say, I didn't commit a murder, or I don't even hate anyone. But here we have the instructions to work, make provisions for rainy days, yet not count on tomorrow, to live with faith today, to have, you know, my confidence is not in the 401k that I've built up. My confidence is in God. it's easy not to think, because it's not so just a cut and dried thing. I want you to turn to Matthew 6 real quick. I don't want to get too far off from just the very point. He just said, don't lose your fact that God's in control. But in Matthew 6, 19 through 34, I would offer to you that 19 through 24 is primarily addressed to folks of a certain affluence. People who were tempted to lay up treasures on earth. And he says to those folks, don't lose sight of what really matters. He said, what really matters is whether you've got treasure in heaven. You know, that you're trying to serve, you know, your goal is this accumulation of wealth. Your goal better be to serve God. Then we come to verse 25. And he says, don't worry about what you're going to eat, what you're going to drink. I don't think there we're still talking to the rich folks. I mean, certainly they need to apply it. But he was talking to those people who live day to day. And that's what he says, live day to day, trusting God. You know, that they're really, they're two people, two groups. The rich have a temptation about money, to all be about hoarding it and getting, you know, I got to pile up more. That poor guy, he has a temptation to not put his faith in God because he's so worried. What am I going to do tomorrow? What? God will take care of you if you're putting Him first. You know, all of us, whatever station in life, from the poorest to the richest, trust God. Put Him first. You know, I don't know what will happen tomorrow. What I need to do is make sure I live in the Lord today. Be righteous. Brother Bowen. All right. Very good. Excellent. All right. Again, you do not know what a day may bring forth. Live your life trusting in God. All right, number 47. Why do the wicked flee when no one pursues? Do what? All right, afraid they'll get caught. What troubles them? What the conscience? You know, look at 28:1. The wicked flee when no one pursues, but the righteous are bold as a lion. The conscience is a powerful thing. You know, and sometimes, you know, and as he said, when no one pursues, they're just the guilt of their conscience drives them on. And yet the righteous, they live before God with confidence. And let's go ahead and get verse 13. Even though there's a separation of verses, I think these go together. He who covers his sins will not prosper, but whoever confesses and forsakes them will have mercy. I want you to pay attention to verse 13, the second phrase. Confesses and forsakes. I grow extremely weary of people who are glad to in their pseudo-humility, confess their sinfulness. Oh, what a, you know, I'm a sinner just like him. Well, then why don't you quit? Why don't you forsake some of this sin? I'm not talking about taking on an air of arrogance that says I never make mistakes. But what's the point of continuing to say, I confess. Confess and forsake. Quit doing it. Stop doing that. Look at the 32nd Psalm. I think this is a great, great picture. Paul quotes David in Romans 4. And this, I think this ties the last two questions together. Verse 1, blessed is he whose transgression is forgiven, whose sin is covered. Blessed is the man to whom the Lord does not impute iniquity, and in whose spirit there is no deceit. Okay, whose transgression is forgiven? Whose sin is covered? Who is the man to whom the Lord does not impute or account iniquity? Let's keep going. Verse 3, when I kept silent, my bones grew old through my groaning all the day long. For day and night your hand was heavy upon me. My vitality was turned into the drought of summer. I acknowledged my sin to you, and my iniquity I have not hidden. I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord, and you forgave the iniquity of my sin. David's sin was not imputed to him. His sin was covered when he broke down and acknowledged his sin to God. You know, this was not some kind of, you know, imputed righteousness, as people would want to say today. When he reached that point that he was willing to turn from his sin to acknowledge it, he was forgiven. Turn away from sin. Don't harden the heart. The next verse, and then we'll open this up. Verse 14 of 28. Happy is the man who is always reverent. That can be translated, blessed is the man who is always reverent. But he who hardens his heart will fall into calamity. Hardening the heart is the opposite of confessing and forsaking one's sins. Or, I won't say the exact opposite, but these go together. The man who reveres God has reverence. The English Standard says, has fears the Lord. He is the man who will acknowledge his wrong before God, who will turn to God for mercy, versus the man who hardens his heart, the man who continues in his sin, who tries to cover them, tries to make excuses. Well, it's my husband's fault, my wife's fault. It was this person, it was that person. Well, you just don't know the way I was born. That's it. To blame my genetics for the choices I make. That's not the way to prosper. The way to prosper is to confess your sins, to forsake, to be reverent before God. Anybody thoughts on this? Turn away from sin. Let's jump to chapter 30. And let me tell you about what I don't know much about. The words of, I don't even know how to pronounce his name. Y'all pronounce him Ager? I don't know who, you know. Who is this guy? He was the son of Jaca. I know that much. And that's about it. And that's it. I mean, you know, I don't know who this guy was. But they saw fit to include his wisdom in this. And he starts it off in a most remarkable way. Now, this is a way to get the attention of an audience and says, listen to me. He says, surely I am more stupid than any man and do not have the understanding of a man. Well, you know, can you imagine you're going to introduce a speaker and we've got a gospel meeting and we say, tonight we have with us Agur. He is more stupid than any man, you know. And everybody would go, well, why did we get him? You know. I think what he does here is, well, let's keep reading what he says. I neither learned wisdom nor have knowledge of the Holy One. Who has ascended into heaven or descended? Who has gathered the wind in his fist? Who has bound the waters in a garment? Who has established all the ends of the earth? What is his name and what is his son's name, if you know? What I believe he is doing here is a couple of things. One, he is acknowledging by hyperbole, by exaggeration, that none of us can know everything. You know, that there are things that are just beyond our grasp because we have not ascended into heaven. We have not been there. You know, and so he's not really saying I'm more stupid than any man, but he is saying, I acknowledge I don't know everything. And I think it's also quite possible that he's doing a little bit of Job. When Job said to his three friends, you know, wisdom will die with you guys. You know, when you guys are dead, there won't be any more wisdom left on the earth because you are so smart. And of course, he was being as sarcastic as he could be with them. That Agur may be challenging some people who really were of a self-inflated, you know, ego. They thought they were something else. And he says, look, none of us really know everything. But verse 5, he showed some great intelligence in this. Every word of God is pure. He is a shield to those who put their trust in him. Do not add to his words lest he rebuke you and you be found a liar. You trust God. Trust his word. Trust his guidance in everything. Don't add to it. Don't try to mix in your own wisdom. Is that what Agur said? He's saying, I'm not coming to you because I'm so smart. I want you to know the wisdom of God. I want you to know what he reveals. And, you know, that's the great challenge. The challenge when we teach, when we preach, is not to try to impress people with, wow, he knows so much. It's to get people to see, there's God's word. God's wisdom is so practical. It's always true. It's pure. It's a shield. Trust that word. Be guided by it. You know, anybody on anything on Agur you want to add, or on this, but you know, verses 5 and 6. You can think about Revelation 22:18-19, Galatians 1:8-9, New Testament passages that go along with it, Deuteronomy 4:1-2. But in this, there are a lot of great thoughts. Agur likes the numbers, as you might notice, and we're not going to go through most of these. You know, we've already looked earlier in the quarter at verses 7 through 9. Two things I request of you. You know, then verse 15, you'll have the leech has two daughters. At the end of verse 15, three things are never satisfied. Four never say enough. Verse 18, there are three things too wonderful. Yes, four I do not understand. I like that 3 and 4. What Old Testament prophet like the for three transgressions of blank and for four? Amos liked that form. And it's not about necessarily the numeral, though in this he does give the amounts. Verse 24 through 28 was one I wanted to look at. There are four things which are little on the earth, but they are exceedingly wise. The ants are a people not strong, yet they prepare their food in the summer. The rock badgers are a feeble folk, yet they make their homes in the crags. The locusts have no king, yet they all advance in ranks. The spider skillfully grasps with its hands, and it is in kings' palaces. Okay. The last one, the spider, some of your translations will say lizard. It's some small animal. What are we supposed to learn from the ant here? Yeah. The same people who are not to boast about tomorrow do prepare. You know, we do make some preparations for the future. Don't ignore what Matthew 6:19-34 says. You know, But yet at the same time, the sun may come up tomorrow. So, you know, be prepared if you can. He's used the ant several times as an example of hard work. What about the rock badgers? And some translations have a different animal. But it's some animal that liked to live in the rocks. Well, what's the point? He's trying to get us to see what's wise about the rock badger. All right. He locks his doors at night, doesn't he? I mean, Proverbs, remember what we've said all along? Proverbs is about not just going to heaven, but having a good life here as best we can. There are exceptions, certainly. But, you know, he looks out for security. You know, and a man ought not to, there's no value in vulnerability. I lock my doors. I don't put bars on them, but, you do some things. Take care of, make some plans. But what about the locust or the grasshopper? What are we supposed to learn from this wise animal? And you got to understand, they're not truly wise. They're just, you know, he's saying they reflect qualities that if we had would be wisdom. What does the locust do? They what? All right, they don't have to be told what to do. And I think there's even something else here. They advance, he says, in ranks. Joel, the prophet Joel, compares them to an army. But is there a king, a general that's whipping each locust, you know, cracking that whip? No, they just move. They move as an army. They move in ranks without being forced to. You know, they traveled in groups. I mean, the swarms of locusts were powerful. Isn't there a lesson for us? About unity and working together and the advancement of the cause, that, you know, nobody should have to force us to work together. We should have a common purpose to devour every green thing in sight. No, that, the locust, you know, it just advanced to eat. But if we are imitators of that little locust, then we work together. That we advance in ranks. We are a powerful army together. You know, work together. That's to me, the lesson of that. And then there is the spider or the lizard. What's the lesson here? Okay. So, do what? Use what you have to advance it. I think, you know, I put down as my answer here, one need not be big and strong to accomplish great things. And then I put a question mark. You know, I have a little more uncertainty about his point, but I think his point is that, look, you know, you may think, oh, I'm at this great disadvantage because, you know, I wasn't born into wealth, or I didn't, you know, go to the finest school, or I've got this advantage. He said, look, if you're determined, you can get there. You can be in the king. You know, everybody hates spiders, and most people detest lizards. Lizards are nothing but snakes with feet. They're creepy. Kind of, they go where they want to go. You know, they get to places because nothing deters them. You know, they go. And I may be reading it wrong, but I think it's saying, look, have some ambition. Who's that?
Nehemiah.
I think so. I think Nehemiah's a great one. You know, well, he's a Jew in captivity who's a cupbearer, right? Which was a pretty honorable position there in the king's palace. And then he rose up to be governor, you know. And, you know, Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, look at the positions they held. Great, you know, have ambition. Putting it all together, not boasting of tomorrow, not selfish ambition, you know, not boastful pride. Okay, I'm on. There may be more that y'all would say about these animals, but I'm going to get 32 and 33 in here just because of the beautiful picture. If you have been foolish in exalting yourself, or if you have devised evil, put your hand on your mouth. For as the churning of milk produces butter, and wringing the nose produces blood, so the forcing of wrath produces strife. You know, yes, if you twist somebody's nose, it'll bleed. If you force wrath, it'll produce strife. Verse 32, if you've pushed yourself too highly, if you've devised evil, put your hand on your mouth. In other words, stop. Back up. You know, don't keep going. You know, I know you've probably heard the old saying, what's the first rule of holes? If you find yourself in one, stop digging. You know, you cannot dig yourself out of a hole. When you've messed up, that's a loud noise. One, you know, put your hand over your mouth, he says. Just stop. Don't keep going. Don't force strife. You know, don't, or force wrath. You know, sometimes we say don't, you know, we need to quit while you're ahead. More commonly, I've learned sometimes try to quit when you're not too far behind. You know, it's, you know, you're in this mess. My best thing to do is say, I'm sorry, and turn and walk away. That's a simple lesson, isn't it? How often do we not apply that? How often have we produced the blood? We rang the nose when we shouldn't have. You know, we churned that butter. Don't do that. Anybody else, anything before we close? We're about to be out of time. I've enjoyed this study. I think I've benefited from it. I hope you have. But one of the things it's done, it's challenged me to think more and more about this. And I want to encourage you to do that. Wednesday night, come prepared for the Bible review.